This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, Islamic terrorists once again target Christians on Resurrection Sunday, this time in Pakistan. But based upon the statement from the White House, you would think it was just a random act of violence. Texas Congressman and Chairman of the Subcommittee on Terrorism, Nonproliferation and Trade, Congressman Ted Poe, joins me in just a moment. And last Wednesday, President Obama was in Argentina speaking to some young people where he suggested there is little difference between capitalism and communism. Is that so? President of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, Dr. Everett Piper, is here for that conversation. Also, is religion the opium of the people, as Karl Marx claimed, or is it actually the antidote to addictive behavior? We'll talk about that later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more about today's topics, our guest, and there's an abundance of resources for you, waiting for you at your fingertips, TonyPerkins.com. Go there, check it out. Also, if you're not already receiving my daily update, you can do so right there at the website. Sign up, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. In fact, you can get my daily devotional tweet that comes out every morning. Just go to Tony, at T. Perkins, rather, and follow me. All right. Yesterday morning, Easter Sunday in Pakistan, a suicide bomber attacked an Easter gathering of Christians and others gathered at a park celebrating Christ's resurrection. A splinter group of the Pakistani Taliban claimed responsibility for the attack that claimed the lives of at least 69 and injured over 300 others. The White House did issue a statement on the attack, but they left out some key details. Here's the statement of the White House. It reads, quote, "The United States condemns in the strongest terms today's appalling attack in Pakistan. This cowardly act is what has long been in what has been a scenic and placid park, has killed dozens of innocent civilians and left scores injured. We send our deepest condolences to the loved ones of those killed, just as our thoughts and prayers are with the many injured in the explosion. The United States stands with the people and government of Pakistan at this difficult hour. We will continue to work with our partners in Pakistan and across the region, as together we will be unyielding in our efforts to root out the scourge of terrorism," end quote. Now, obvious glaring omissions. One, why were these folks targeted? Well, they were targeted because they were Christians celebrating the Lord's resurrection. Second, the White House failed to name the terror attack for what it was. It was Islamic terror. Joining me here on Washington Watch is Congressman Ted Poe. Congressman Poe serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee as chairman of the Subcommittee on Terrorism, Nonproliferation, and Trade. He also serves on the House Judiciary Committee, the Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, Homeland Security, and Investigations. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to talk to you.
I hope you had a great resurrection weekend as you celebrated that back home in Texas.
Yes. As you know, Easter is to the Christians is the most important day of the year to celebrate and honor the resurrection of the center of our religion, Jesus Christ. So, yes, it was great.
Well, Congressman, if you were simply going by the statement of the White House regarding this attack in Pakistan, you would think that this was a random act of violence, but that's not the case. Now, is there an explanation as to why this president continues to refuse and to acknowledge that Islamists have declared war on innocent Christians?
Well, the statement issued by the White House, if you pull all the statements under similar terrorist attacks, they're all the same. It's a high, it's rhetoric on the part of the White House, so we stand with the people. And it doesn't deal with the details in any of these attacks. And as you said, who did the killing? It was a branch of the Taliban who believe in killing folks who disagree with their radical beliefs in religion. And Christians are the prime target. So the Taliban who kills people in the name of their radical religion targets Christians because they don't like Christians. And the people killed were Christians on not just any day of the week or year. It was on Easter Sunday. So they obviously picked a day to terrorize Christians on the holiest day of the year. And they did. They killed them, and they were indiscriminate. Men, women, and at least 29 children were killed. And also, it happens in Pakistan, and Pakistan does not, in my opinion, do enough to protect minority religions, especially Christians. So the president doesn't want to tell the American people or the world the obvious. It's genocide against Christians. And the House actually passed a bill before we recessed that said that the killing of Christians worldwide is now by ISIS and other groups is amounted to genocide. And so that's what has occurred. It was a genocide act by an Islamic radical group, the Taliban, against hundreds of Christians. That's what the president should have said.
Now, if the president is trying to do what I think he made reference to at one point, that he doesn't want to escalate this or suggest in any way that this is a religious war, that somehow there is this war between Islam and Christianity. Well, I mean, clearly Christianity has not declared war on Islam, but I can't say the opposite is true. But let me say, all right, Mr. President, if that is the case, you don't want to escalate it, you don't want to make matters worse, but has the failure to acknowledge what's taken place done anything to abate these attacks?
No. It's almost like the president doesn't want people to know the truth. Why doesn't the president want us to know that these are Christians who were killed, and they were killed because they were Christians by a radical Islamic group? I don't know why he doesn't want us to know that. And it doesn't this is not, a religious war, but I tell you one thing, to ISIS and the Taliban, they are at war with us. And they're not just at war with Christians. They're at war with other Muslims who disagree with them. But they are at war with anybody who disagrees with their radical jihad. But we don't want to acknowledge the obvious, and we won't define the enemy. So when you don't define the enemy, you won't tell the American people who are committing these crimes and who they're against, it's going to be very difficult to defeat them. They're at war with us, whether we're at war with them, whether the West is at war with them or not, it's still questionable.
Now, the Secretary of State, John Kerry, did come out as a result of a deadline established by Congress for the State Department to report on whether or not what was happening in the Middle East was genocide. They did come out, Secretary Kerry, apparently not the White House not being in agreement with it necessarily, that he came out and said, yes, this is genocide. What are the next steps here? I mean, obviously, the White House is not coming along to recognize and publicly acknowledge what's happening here. What can Congress do? I mean, I know you've done a lot. What else can be done to bring attention to what is actually happening in many parts of the world?
Recognizing first, as you mentioned, that it is genocide, and Kerry did make that statement that he had a deadline. Congress had required a deadline that he make a determination one way or the other, and they did. And it is genocide against Christians worldwide. That raises the level of humanitarian crimes against humanity by these other groups, these radical groups. And so it's not indiscriminate. They are discriminating, specifically committing crimes against Christians worldwide, and that is a goal of these groups. And so it recognizes, it raises the awareness of it to the highest possible level, and Congress then has the obligation to make sure that we deal however we can against all of these groups who are killing people in this genocide, who are killing Christians. So things we can do, we have to do everything, and right now we don't really have a plan to defeat ISIS, or strategies to beat ISIS. Now maybe we will actually get a plan to defeat ISIS, because when you have Christians that are being not only murdered, but they are being priests who are being crucified, nuns who are being murdered, it's obvious to me that this is genocide, and Congress will take any type of action we can.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. My guest, Congressman Ted Poe of Texas. We're discussing yet another terrorist attack, Islamic terrorist attack on Christians that took place yesterday on Resurrection Sunday, Easter Sunday, this time in Pakistan. You know, Congressman, we've had these conversations. We've actually had the privilege of traveling overseas together to Israel. Of course, they live under a constant threat of attacks such as these. You know, we not so much so. However, I want to ask you this question. Are you concerned that if we do not get a handle on who the enemy is and how we stop, suppress, eliminate, whatever you want to however you want to describe it, the enemy, are you concerned that we're going to see more of stuff like this on our own soil here in the United States?
Absolutely. We'll see it. It's going to be happening more in Europe and in the U.S. The crimes, let's use ISIS specifically, the crimes that ISIS is committing are not being diminished. They are increasing. And they are increasing not just in the Middle East, but in Europe, in North Africa, and now we know in the United States as well. ISIS is on the rise. They are not a JV team. They are a foe to be reckoned with, and their actions will only increase by any means they can find to cause terror against those they don't like. So it's going to increase, and it's not on the downturn. This is the outlook is not good.
Now, I think James Comey, FBI director, was testifying before, I believe it was the House Judiciary Committee about 2 months ago, asked about ISIS activity domestically, and I think he said there were active investigations into ISIS in every state here in the United States with the exception of Alaska.
Yes, and they are on there. There are numerous investigations that are the public knows about, and I suspect there are many investigations that the public does not know about that they're being investigated. It's on the increase. ISIS activity is on the increase, while we still yet to admit that they are trying to destroy us and our way of life. The country, the government, will not admit that. And, you know, the president talks about how more people are killed by lightning strikes every year than killed by ISIS. We underestimate how these people act, and I think that's a big mistake.
It's dangerous, without question. Congressman Ted Poe, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tony. Always good to talk to you.
All right, Congressman Ted Poe of Texas. To find out more, go to the website tonyperkins.com. He knows what he's talking about. I mean, he serves on these committees. He was actually a judge in Texas. He's long been involved in these issues. And now he sits on the subcommittee, actually chairs one of the subcommittees on terrorism. So he has firsthand information as to what is happening, both here in America and abroad. All right. When we come back, Karl Marx once said that religion is the opium of the people. But a new study suggests, actually, religion could be the antidote to addictive behavior. We're going to talk about that when we return. Also, we're going to talk about the president's comments last week in Argentina with Dr. Everett Piper of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. He's going to be here a little bit later. And we're going to have phone calls from you later in the program. So don't go away. We're back with a lot more after this. One of the questions I often receive from our listeners is, what can I do right here in my community to make a difference? The answer? A lot. And one of the most effective ways to make a difference right where you live is by organizing and leading a culture impact team in your church. A culture impact team, or CIT, will help keep the members of your church both informed and engaged through a wide variety of tools that we can place in your hands. Go to cultureimpact.org today for more information and order a Culture Impact Toolkit. We can provide you with all the training and materials you need to keep your church informed, inspired, and engaged. It's all free, and we can send it out to you today when you visit cultureimpact.org. Invite your friends at a church to join you in setting up a Culture Impact team. We want to help you answer the question, what can I do to make a difference? So visit cultureimpact.org or call us today, toll free, 800-225-4008.
Thanks to AFR, I got the courage to found a day school, which we are founded for the glory of God and for the health of the family. And we are in our fourth year now, and we have a lot of happy children and parents. And throughout the entire process of founding the school and hiring the faculty, getting the curriculum, finding the equipment, finding the place, recruiting families, everything, I have turned to AFR, and they have been amazing. Everyone from Alex Farland and Brian Fisher, Sandy Rios, James Dobson, it's just all fantastic. Keep up the good work. You're an inspiration to me daily. Thanks.
American Family Radio is making a difference. You can hear more stories of changed lives during our three-day Share-a-thon starting April 12th. American Family Radio, 25 years on the battlefront for your family.
Oh, look at that sweet face.
Yeah, look at you, little man. You know we're already saving for you to go to college.
That's right.
Because someday soon you're going to be a grown-up. No, it's okay. Yeah, you got a little while.
The key to a successful long-term savings plan is time. That means starting in your 20s would be ideal. But did you know that's also the right time to set up a will or trust? If you have children or own real estate, it's important to have a plan. The AFA Foundation has a free will planning guide called Planning Your Legacy to help you get started. Because you're not too young to plan your future. Request the free will planning guide when you visit afafoundation.net. Again, that's afafoundation.net. You can also find us on Facebook or call the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. Hope you had a great weekend. I did. Absolutely great weekend. Kind of a long weekend with the family, church, friends. Just had a good time. In fact, we are now on the end of March. March is a month of celebrations from beginning to end for us. So all three of my daughters born in March. So we have three birthdays. My birthday. And our anniversary, so we have a lot of cake. In fact, still got cake in the freezer. So March is one of those months where I gained about 4 or 5 pounds just eating all the cake. But my oldest daughter celebrated her 24th birthday on Saturday. So Kendall is now 24. That would suggest that I'm getting older. But I have three beautiful girls. And just blessed to celebrate all of their birthdays in the month of March. And then two boys, their birthdays are in the fall. That's what I call family planning. All right. Karl Marx once said that religion, which he sought to stamp out, was the opium of the masses. Well, a new study data analyzed by the drugabuse.com in this report called Drugs and Devotion, comparing substance abuse by believers and non-believers. Now, what this shows is a correlation between religious beliefs and a reluctance to experiment with narcotics. Now, non-believers, and this is from the Washington Times, they wrote a story on this report. Non-believers in the study, for instance, were 12 times more likely to use LSD and more than 5 times likely than their religious counterparts to try cocaine in the past year. Now, it's interesting because states with the lowest rates of religious belief had some of the highest rates of drug use. The least religious state, Vermont, where only 32% of residents said religion is very important in their lives, had the third highest rate of illicit drug use. It is fascinating because this is actually information that saw in our own research at the Marriage and Religion Research Institute, MARRI, where a longitudinal study showed that those who go to church on a weekly basis, only 19% ever used marijuana. Those who went on a monthly basis, it was 40% used marijuana. Those who only went those who never went was 60%. And so it pretty fascinating. There is a direct correlation. And some would say, well, why is that? Well, here's now the – and I'm, again, quoting from the Washington Times, where they said the study supports the notion that Christian theology discourages drug use. When asked the very important reason not to use marijuana, 67% of religious 8th and 10th graders said it is against their faith. But General Arthur Dean, chairman and CEO of Community Anti-Drug Coalitions of America, emphasized the role that community plays in snuffing out drug use. Quote, being involved in a religious service is what we would call a protective factor. He goes on to say, what we find is that the involvement in structured activities, whether they be religious or whether they be sports or other kinds of activity, all serve as protective factors. I would disagree with that. Now, you remember midnight basketball? Remember that was to try to keep kids out of trouble? It doesn't have the same effect. It might keep them distracted for a little while, but the research shows that it is actually religious participation that not only prevents addictive behaviors, and this is my take on this, my understanding of it, is that it's what religion does, let me talk about it like this. Look, it's a relationship. We're all created in the image of God, and we're created as human beings. We have a God void in our life until we come into relationship with God through His Son, Jesus Christ, where Jesus said in John, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. And when we come into that relationship, Jesus said that I've come to give you life and give it abundantly. When we have that abundant life, you know, we may not always be happy, but we have abiding joy. And therefore, we're less likely to self-medicate or try to fill that void in our lives with something else, some other form, you know, some form of addicted behavior, whether that's drugs, alcohol, or sex. Even work. I mean, work can be something that we try to fill a void in our life by overachieving. And so why I think you see this correlation between non-addictive behavior in religion, religious, Christian, this is Christian, this is not religion, this is Christianity, is because that need is met in your life. You don't have to seek it elsewhere. But here's one final statement. Greg Jowell, who is the director of campus engagement at InterVarsity, said this. He said, religion can play more of a role in fighting drug use and fostering public virtue, but only if we let it. Quote, religion in small ways challenges me to daily live out the fruits of the Spirit, and to demonstrate love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, and self-control, all of which would be immense virtues, he said. Imagine if those played out in a presidential election, end quote. Religion, a relationship with Jesus Christ that comes in large part because of religious freedom in this country, as we see governments, our own governments, driving that into the recesses of society, what we are doing is we are walling off the very thing that can protect the vulnerable in our society and help mitigate and avoid the cost that we pay as a society when people are drawn into bad choices and lifestyles. This is one of the reasons we should be and should demand our elected officials advocate for religious freedom. All right, folks, we're going to talk about that more. But when we come back, Dr. Everett Piper of Oklahoma Wesleyan University joins us. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Some important economic data coming out by Friday. Of course, the Federal Reserve is speaking, so everybody's watching once again. She's got to be a little bit more concerned, Janet Yellen, that is, when we look at some of the inflation numbers or the lack thereof. We have some numbers coming out that would indicate particularly the price inflation index dropped. So it looks like inflation is a little bit lower. Just last time she spoke, she had mentioned she felt she was well on course to meeting their 2% target rate. I don't know. It's looking like that is falling into question right now. Consumer spending was up 0.1%, but income was also up, and that was up 0.2%. And that means the savings rate up once again, matching its 1-year high of 5.4%. Now, I look at that as very good news. The government looks at that as bad news. The Federal Reserve looks at that as bad news. This is a government and an economy that desperately needs all of you to be getting into debt, not getting deeper into your savings account and growing that. But that's a very good thing for the family, and that's what I care about more than anything. So keep up the good work and working on spending on our needs, not on our wants. Why is that when we seem to have so much discretionary income? That is because we really don't have much discretionary income. It is just an illusion that the government thinks they have created. So interesting numbers, including we've got to watch oil very closely this week.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. On Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right. Last week, President Obama was in Cuba in a historic visit to the island nation. No president has visited the nation in nearly 90 years. And, of course, there's a reason for that. But President Obama was the first president to end that and visit Cuba. Now, the Cuba trip was obviously headline-grabbing, along with his decision to go forward with his trip as planned, despite the Islamic terror attack in Brussels. I'm not going to go there. But also making headlines were his comments during his Argentina stop, where he was talking to some young people, and his comments about capitalism and socialism. The president... I'm going to read you what the president said, where he said, as he was talking to these young people, he said, "I guess to make a broader point, so often in the past there's been a sharp division between left and right, between capitalist and communist or socialist, and especially in the Americas. That's been a big debate, right? Oh, you know, you're a capitalist Yankee dog, and oh, you know, you're some crazy communist that's going to take away everybody's property. And I mean, those are interesting intellectual arguments. But I think for your generation, you should be practical and just choose from what works. You don't have to worry about whether it neatly fits into socialist theory or capitalist theory. You should just decide what works," end quote. Well, joining me now to talk about what works is the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, Dr. Everett Piper. Dr. Piper, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, as always, I'm pleased to join you.
Well, let's talk about what works. It's more than just theory. A lot of people have lost their lives as a result of communism and its pursuit of trying to take away people's property and make the government supreme in terms of deciding who gets what and where it goes. So this is more than just some theoretical discussion.
Absolutely. You know, when I hear the president's quote, especially when you read it back to me, and I actually hear it in a live voice rather than reading the transcript, it smacks of it's very much akin to the emergent church and the emergent mush, the post-modernity that the church is suffering right now. How many times have your kids or your grandkids said, it doesn't matter what you believe as long as it works for you? Or how many times have they responded to a challenge where they say, whatever? It's the whateverism of our culture. It's the utilitarian response of the postmodern age, that there are no principles that matter any longer. It's just pragmatism and outcome that matters. Ignoring the fact that, yes, okay, let's take the president's argument at face value, where he says that health care in Cuba has improved as the result of the Castro regime, and that people have better health care and their life expectancy has increased. Okay, the outcome of health care is all that matters. We don't care about those people that have been in prison. We don't care about those people who have suffered persecution. We don't care about those people that have lost their property, because the outcome of health care was all that mattered. Utilitarian goals with no virtue and no value and no principles. All it is power at the end of the day.
Well, you know, he goes on to talk about the health care, as you mentioned, in Cuba. The fact that their economy is locked into the 1950s. I mean, they're an impoverished nation, but they have health care. I mean, such a distorted worldview that as long as you have, as you said, this utilitarian view, as long as you have what is desired or what is declared to be the number one outcome in life, health care, then everything's fine. I mean, I think many Cubans would disagree.
Yeah, and who decided that health care was the summum bonum, the greatest good? Who decided that that was the thing that mattered most? What about personal freedom? What about religious freedom? What about the right to own property? What about the right to raise your children in a Judeo-Christian ethic? What about the right to be separate from the government and to live a free life, not obstructed by or imposed upon by power and by politics? What about those freedoms that we hold dear? Are those subservient to health care? Apparently so, as the president talks about the pragmatic outcome of socialism versus the outcomes that we know to be true from capitalism, because it's given the human race the greatest amount of economic freedom as well as religious freedom that we've known in the history of mankind, under a Judeo-Christian ethic that thrives within a capitalistic environment.
Well, Dr. Piper, we would know that it is, in fact, the evidence would suggest that it is true, that that is the president's view, because you're involved in actually a case where the president has put health care above religious freedom in our own country and said that he will force religious institutions as well as other nonprofits and even for-profit organizations, if he can get by with it, to provide health care that violates their tenets of their own faith.
Exactly. And as you know, Oklahoma Wesleyan University is part of the Supreme Court case that was heard last week in the Supreme Court of the United States. We're under the same banner as the Little Sisters of the Poor, where the government is telling us we have to follow their lead on health care and therefore lose all of our other freedoms.
We're up against a break. Dr. Piper, as always, great to have you on the program. Appreciate the friendship and appreciate what you're doing there at Oklahoma Wesleyan University.
Blessings, Tony.
All right, Dr. Everett Piper, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, I got another comment on that when we come back. And then I'm going to open up the phone lines because I want to talk a little bit more about this religious freedom issue. I'm going to set the stage for that when we come back. Get ready. Get your dialing finger ready. Go ahead. Do those exercises. Get it limber because we're going to open the phone lines here on Washington Watch in just a few minutes. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
To visit the Lincoln Memorial, that is an awe-inspiring moment on our tour of Washington, D.C., the Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, and Mount Vernon, the home of George and Martha Washington. As you look up at the statue of Abraham Lincoln, you turn around and you look back towards the Washington Monument and the United States Capitol down the Washington Mall. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. That's just one visit on one day in our tour of our nation's capital. We call it a spiritual heritage tour. We're going there. We're also going to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate trip that's back-to-back. You can do one or you can do both. For all the information on these spiritual heritage tours in June and September, visit spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com for all the information.
What are students saying about Wesley Biblical Seminary? Here's Daphne Armstrong.
I chose WBS because of the biblical teaching that I knew I would receive. My relationship with God has gotten so strong. I'm really, truly depending on Him, and it's completely changed my way of thinking.
I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary. Come and be a part of our community.
Apply today at wbs.edu. Wesley Biblical Seminary. Discover the difference.
There's an urgent need for Christians to vote. Imagine the impact people of faith will have on the future of our nation, the character of its leadership, and the health of its families if biblical principles are applied during this election. Pledge to vote your values and convictions. Get the free voter guide at afaaction.net. This is the most comprehensive guide available anywhere. This message brought to you by AFA Action.
Hope Rains is responding to families in need following flooding in Greenville, Mississippi. Greenville is among many communities severely impacted by flooding in the Delta region. Volunteers are needed now. Here's 8 days of Hope President Steve Tiber.
We need your help today. I mean, it's that simple. We're looking for people who just want to serve others. You know, you don't have to be super gifted. Every disaster gives an opportunity for a believer to share a glimpse of Jesus Christ. You know, the best sermon I ever heard was the one I saw. We're just there to love others as God commands us. And here's where you and I get to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
To volunteer and help the flood victims of Greenville, Mississippi, please email HopeRains at 8daysofhope.com. This relief effort is for God's glory. Come and be the gospel in action. For more information, visit 8daysofhope.com. And please pray for this relief effort and for the families affected by this disaster. Hope Reigns is a ministry division of 8 Days of Hope.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com, on Twitter, at TPerkins. All right, I want to continue for just a moment here on the president's statements last week in Argentina when he was discussing with some young people that, you know, really, you know, what's the difference between capitalism, communism? It's, you know, choose what works for you. Well, he did. I want to defend. He went on to say this. He said, quote, "I think that what you'll find is that the most successful societies and the most successful economies are ones that are rooted in a market-based system, but also recognize that a market does not work by itself. It has to have a social and a moral and ethical and community basis, and there has to be inclusion." Now, therein lies the problem in with a market-based system, because the market... A market-based system does have to have a moral foundation, or it doesn't work. Or you see some of the unbridled greed that we've seen in our own system, in Wall Street, in big business. You know, I increasingly, as we've lost the moral foundation, which the left has systematically dismantled, they've dismantled that moral and social foundation of our free market system, and therefore it doesn't work. And so then there's the cry for socialism. Then there's the rise of Bernie Sanders. Because we have dismantled the foundation for a free market system, which is based on a, well, I mean, it's worked because of a Judeo-Christian ethic. And as we have driven that to the recesses of society, yeah, why are we surprised that capitalism all of a sudden starts taking advantage of people in big business? I mean, look at what is happening in Georgia. Prime example of where we see big business and cowardly politicians continuing this effort to dismantle the moral foundation, which causes moral chaos and implosion, which is only paving the way for socialism. Because somebody's got to fill the void, and it's going to be government. I mean, you might recall the old song, "The Devil Went Down to Georgia." Well, he's been down there again. But this time, he is in the form of big business and, as I mentioned, cowardly politicians. In an announcement this morning, the two-term governor of Georgia has capitulated to big business and decided to give the government a blank check to punish Georgia's men and women of faith. Now, there was a watered-down piece of legislation, a religious liberty bill. It went through both houses of the legislature, but then it was, you know, was amended to where it was almost meaningless. It gave protections to basically religious organizations, churches, that they could not be punished by the state for their view of marriage, that they couldn't have their tax exemption taken away because they believed marriage was between a man and a woman, which, by the way, is the same view the president had up until 3 years ago, that they couldn't be, if they were a nonprofit, for instance, they were helping women who had been in sex trafficked or had been, you know, abused or something, that they couldn't be denied a government grant just because they believed the marriage was the union of a man and a woman. Well, Hollywood, big business, weighed in and said, if you sign that, we're not coming to Georgia. Disney added their voice to it. Talk about goofy. And the governor has now come out and said he's going to veto. I mean, it's almost a worthless piece of legislation to begin with, the way it's been watered down. But the fact that they cannot even stand up to defend the most basic of religious freedoms for churches and religious organizations is pathetic. And so we're seeing, plank by plank, we're seeing the moral foundation of our society taken up. And I go back to the story earlier, talking about the societal benefits that religion plays in terms of drug addiction. I mean, I go back to my time as a law enforcement officer. In fact, I was talking to a friend of mine who ran into the grocery store today. He's still at the sheriff's office. We were talking, and he was talking about how many shootings are taking place and how frequent this crime is. And a lot of it is related to drugs. And if we could solve that, not by building more prisons, not by putting more police on the street, but by giving people the opportunity to fill that internal void with something that was positive and helpful, that actually not only prevented them from being a burden on society and a threat to others, but actually the opposite, that they were productive, they were helpful, and they made society a better place. Would that not be a smart thing to do? But now we have politicians who are in the grips of big business that are actually working to undermine religious freedom in this country. And so here's the question I have for you today. I've really grown very tired of politicians who capitulate, like Nathan Deal in Georgia, who capitulated, Mike Pence in Indiana, who was a friend of mine, who capitulated last year when the big business came in and said, if you sign this, if you don't veto this religious liberty bill, we're not coming to your state. It's pathetic. And we are, I think we're digging our own grave as a culture and as a country. And here's the question I have for you, the time we have left, 866-372-7234. Would you be willing to make a pledge that you're not going to vote for politicians who vote against religious liberty? Those politicians who take a stand against religious liberty, are you willing to stand and say, I'm not voting for you? I'm there. In fact, I'm going to take that pledge. In fact, I pledge right here on Washington Watch today. Mark this down. March the 28th. I will not vote for a candidate, incumbent or challenger, who votes against or takes a stand against religious freedom. Won't do it. What about you? You willing to take that pledge? 866-372-7234. You willing to take a pledge to say you're not going to vote for politicians who vote against religious liberty? 866-372-7234. The phone lines are lighting up. Don't be discouraged. You can also tweet me at T Perkins. And I'll tell you, you guys on the left, I'll just spare you. I'm not going to read your tweets, so don't bother with all your hate stuff. But if you're legitimate, go ahead and tweet me. I'll read your tweets. All right, 866-372-7234. And let's go to Peter in Texas. Peter, welcome to Washington Watch.
Am I on?
You are on. Go right ahead.
Okay. Hey, thanks. Appreciate your program. Hey, just wanted to, I like your idea of the pledge. Absolutely. I would do that. And, I was just sitting here thinking about it. For some reason, when it comes to being political, we change our values. Because if some boss came into my house and said, I get to go in your daughter's bathroom, and if you don't do that, if you don't let me do that, I'm going to fire you. I'd say, fire me. It, you know, money doesn't come before my family and everything, but when it comes to the whole state, somehow we lay it all down. I don't understand why we have a difference of values in different places.
Hmm. Hey, it's a good point. These values that we have are the whole idea in the history of this country. In fact, the Pilgrims, the reason they came here, and I talk about this a lot because our kids are taught that they came here just for religious freedom. They actually, the freedom of worship, as the president describes, they had that in Holland. When they left England, they went to Holland, went back, because it wasn't they couldn't worship the way they wanted to. They couldn't live the way they wanted to. They couldn't take those values that Peter talked about outside of their homes. They wanted to live according to those values. They wanted to build a community based on those values, which is what made America successful. I don't care what the left says. That's why America has been successful. And it's also why it's coming apart at the seams. Because we have politicians and big business that is dismantling it, that moral foundation. And capitalism, I'll tell you, I am the first one to tell you that capitalism will not work. And I'm all for free markets. But they will not work without a moral foundation, and we're losing it just because of what Peter said. We're not willing to take our values outside of our homes or outside of our churches. And we don't change that, we lose the country. Peter, thanks for calling. Appreciate you listening. All right, let's go. Let's work another call here. Let's go to Arkansas, where David is on the line. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony.
How you doing?
Oh, pretty good, man. Better than I deserve.
Well, good.
In answer to your question, I would love to take that pledge. However, just as you explained a while ago, that friend of yours in Indiana, just because they say they wouldn't do it, doesn't mean they're not going to turn around and back out of what they say anymore.
No, I agree.
Politician.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying if you can't. And that's the – I was talking with – I had a reporter was talking to me today and asking me about – actually, no, I was interviewed on another radio show. And they asked me about a particular candidate, and I said they don't have a record. And I don't know where they stand on these issues. But once I know – and, David, once I know a candidate who has voted the wrong way, then there's no doubt. And I will not support that candidate if they are wrong on this issue, unless there is a mea culpa, that unless they confess and they say why and they, you know, are very public, they will not do that again. But even then, I'm going to be hard-pressed, because this is a fundamental issue. It is our first freedom. And every other freedom that we enjoy as Americans hinge on this freedom. David, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate you calling. All right, let's go to Missouri, where Peter is on the line. Peter, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi there. How you doing? First I want to say that I, as far as these religious liberty bills go, I wholeheartedly agree with the stated intent and function that they seem to have. I'm not a lawyer, though, so I don't know anything about the particulars of what's actually in the law and how that would break down in terms of affecting people in their lives. But if I could play devil's advocate for just a second, I also think that the implicit idea of people's ability to have the freedom to practice their lives the way they want in this country, that's a big part of what America is really all about. And I would maybe make the argument that on a certain level, there are some things that, from a Christian point of view, even though the doctrine and the faith would seem to oppose them, there are certain things that, for some Americans, like the gay marriage thing, for example, that sort of constitutes for them an equal practice of their freedom. And so I wonder how it seems to me that there needs to be a way to resolve this tension between what we are willing to allow for the standards of what America represents in terms of liberty and freedom and what an individual in terms of their faith wants to be able to represent. And it seems to me that this is something we can work out because, especially from a Christian perspective, ultimately we want to be.
Well, here's what we're talking about, Peter, and I get your point, all right? And I, you know, even God gives freedom of choice, okay? He in the Garden of Eden, he gave Adam and Eve an opportunity to mess up, and they did, unfortunately. And you cannot make law to make people do the right thing. Now, you set boundaries and you set standards, and if they, you know, they make a choice then. But what we embrace and what we normalize, you're going to get more of, okay? But here's the point on these particular bills. And we have one in Congress. It's called the First Amendment Defense Act. And it simply says this. It says the government can't, and this is a state version of this, the government cannot punish you because you hold a view that marriage is the union of a man and a woman. Doesn't say that you can't refuse to serve somebody or anything like that that they're trying to make these into. It just simply says the government can't, if you're a church or a religious organization, they can't take away your tax exemption. If you are have a contract with the government, they can't take away your contract because you believe that marriage is the union of a man and a woman. That's what it's saying. That's the ability to live out your faith. But here's what we're seeing in this, Peter, is that the side that is always trumpeting tolerance, they're anything but tolerant. They want to demand that you embrace their choices. And if you don't, they want to use the power of the state to punish you. That's what we're talking about. Peter, thanks for calling. Appreciate you listening. Folks, the time flies. We're going to talk more about this because I got some responses on Twitter. I definitely won't vote for anyone who wouldn't defend religious freedom. Shame on Republican governors for caving. I take the pledge to not vote for any politician who is not for religious freedom. All right, folks, keep tweeting me on that because you know what? I may just design that pledge. And then you can take it. All right. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C., For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.